to get a bit earthy, it's almost like nature, you know, that's a self-correcting system to some extent as well. And so is, that's what the blockchain's modeled after, essentially. Like, it has the ability to not only self-heal, but then, yeah, be able to detect those fraudulent transactions. And then when you get into like smart contracts, it's literally like buying a new car and having the details of it like out in the open, but they don't know your name.
That is the awesome developer Steve, and this is episode 29 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Hello, and welcome to episode 29 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti, and today's guest is developer Steve. Steve is one of those fun characters that you meet at a meetup or at a hackathon sometime and you instantly relate to. He has held the developer relationship / evangelist role with major tech companies, including PayPal, Braintree, Xerox, Telstra, and now IBM. We had a pretty fun chat because we know each other quite well. I hope you enjoyed that. Let's get to know Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Happy days. Did you just get lunch?
A few hours ago. Actually, I was just eating some Whiz Fizz.
Oh, nice. Very nice. So, let's go back in time and talk about how you got to be developer Steve.
Oh, that is a fun story. It was actually partially by accident. And I just kind of created it out of, I was an analyst for 10 years. Actually, that makes me feel really old. But I was an analyst for 10 years with Australian Yellow Pages and sort of coming out of that and emerging into web development. I rebranded myself and kind of just decided to run with the name Developer Steve. If not, I mean, my only thing at the time was as a developer to sort of be a little bit unique doing public stuff. And well, one thing led to another, and I ended up as the evangelist for PayPal, Braintree, and then Xero, and then Telstra, and now IBM.
Well, that's when I met you, when you were the evangelist for PayPal, Braintree, right? You were running meetups in Sydney. In fact, you were kind of like the reason why I'm in this space now.
Which is awesome. Like, yeah.
It is. Because you ran that, you were running the e-commerce meetup, I think, at the time, and you ran something about Bitcoin.
That's right. I remember the panel. Actually, the catering that night was amazing, and the discussions were really good too. Yeah, it was part of Commerce Factory. I still have some swag and stickers from that left over.
Funnily enough. Oh my gosh, that was in 2014.
Yeah, 2014, and I still remember the panel. I gave each of the panelists these mini little electronic ATMs from National Geographic, with put Braintree stickers on them. Yeah, it was a great night out.
That was really good. So that was my first official Bitcoin themed meetup. And from then I met Jason Williams, who was the organizer of Bitcoin Sydney, which later I came to be organizer as well. So there you go. You're part of my history too. Yay.
Amazing. Oh, yeah. And like special kudos to you. Like, I've literally watched that community grow over the years, and it's just like, it's phenomenal to see.
So you have a little hand in that, my friend. Thank you. Everybody can thank Steve for that next time you see them.
No, it's amazing to see, and that's one of the things I have really liked over the years. And look, being an evangelist, well, it's rather long hours sometimes, but when you see like groups just sort of grow out of some of the activities, or even alongside some of the activities you're doing, just seeing them grow, like, that's amazing. That's what it's for.
Indeed. So from Braintree to... what did you do after that?
Xero. Good friends at Xero. A lot of the Xero integration marketplace reviews, and just geeking out with accountants, and having fun with all the numbers. A lot of bank integrations at the time. That was 2016.
And then after that one?
After that, I decided to... So it's funny, like coming from a developer background, it's something you kind of see in industry peers in the advocate world do from time to time, particularly those that come from developer backgrounds. Like you'll see them go out and start to build stuff again after a few years, just because your inner dev is screaming to be able to get more hands-on and sort of build out product offerings and such. So well, I went and became a CTO for a fintech, which is kind of leading into where I started playing with blockchain things.
Okay. Let's just pause a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the evangelist role. What exactly is that, and how did it change your life from just sitting behind the computer programming? I would guess quite a lot, right?
Oh yeah, heaps. actually, to be fair, I don't think. So to answer the first question, it's a very multi-hatted role. So, and I say that quite broadly because literally like when I joined PayPal Braintree, and it was, you're right, it was a massive transition. In fact, I didn't even understand what I was in for. And I think that's kind of a common, it's a reoccurring theme you see amongst first-time DevRels, developer relations folk, is that's what you see is, particularly coming from a developer background. So before I was an evangelist, like I was a tech lead at Clemenger in Sydney, and literally, as a tech lead, you have a director standing over you going, where is it? Where is it? Why is this project not delivered? Like, can you quote on this? Like, it's literally, I always call digital agency organized chaos. And well, that's why I liked it. whereas DevRel, it was interesting. I went to the PayPal office in Sydney and York Street for like the first week. And then, like, I didn't meet any of my team. They're all, like, I was part of a global team. And so after the first week, like, one of my new colleagues was like, actually, it was Tim in Germany, but he was like, why are you going to the office? Like, you don't need to go. Don't go to the office. Like, you should be out, like, doing stuff, like, out in the community, going to conferences, like, wherever you want to go, like, you go there. And that was really weird because then it was a reverse question almost, like, for many, many, many years. It was like you go to an office all the time, you hang out at a desk, you do the 9-to-5 thing. This wasn't that. This was literally, here's a bunch of resources, like you need to go out and do stuff with everyone. Where do you want to go and why aren't you there? It was a little bit of an adjustment to get used to, but really cool, like being able to meet so many amazing folks around the world.
But yeah, it was one of those roles that you pivot in very quickly, personally.
All right, and so you got adjusted to that, and you were in that first role for how long? A couple of years?
2 years. I was PayPal/Braintree developer evangelist in APAC, which was an amazing adventure. There was met so many folks like yourself, so many great communities. It was just amazing to be able to work alongside and just help a lot of these community groups grow and where we could.
And you were doing like a pretty big hackathon at the time, right?
Battle Hack, yeah. Yeah, that was three years in the making, yeah. And countries all over the world, like those places I'd never been, all of a sudden we're running, hackathons in Mexico and in Tokyo and Berlin, and it was phenomenal, like such a ride. It was actually, I think it was over quicker than I kind of realized what it was. Like, yeah, it was a crazy, crazy adventure that was amazing.
All right. And okay, so now let's fast forward to your CTO role and how you got back into building and how did blockchain come into that?
Really good question. There's a really interesting story behind this one. It was actually, as a CTO, it was one of those, I'm going to say, table flip moments of like, patent lawyer coming in, dropping something on my desk, going, hey, guess what? That solution you just built, well, there's part of it that's not too good. No, amazing question. Just to step back a bit, I was building out a real-time payments platform, maybe kind of before NPP, the National Payments Platform, but I know that there was a few in the works at the time. Essentially, it was building on the back of FPOS, some functionality that FPOS had at the time. And I won't go too much into those details because there was a lot of meetings, but essentially, part of the platform I designed, and it was industry standard. It was literally, you know, just a REST API payments-driven platform to do real-time payments. It turns out a certain social platform at the time had a bit of a patent around how part of it was intending to work. So I was already looking at Hyperledger anyway, particularly for the security side of things. But yeah, Hyperledger was kind of the thing we ended up building in. Namely the Aroha branch, which uses protobuf instead of REST to do its API calls. So,
That is super cool. Is that certain social platform the same that is being sued currently?
I believe they're constantly being sued.
No, because of, I don't know, it's some issue with the NPP, I think. I don't know if it is.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. No, I had not heard that one. That's interesting.
I just saw that, I think, over the weekend on Twitter. I will look for it, and I will send you the link, but I will also put it on the show description when I find it. I won't mention their name because I don't want to be sued. So, but you guys can go find out.
I'm sure everyone will be able to track it down. But yeah, I mean, Aroha.
You went on and you used Hyperledge to build this thing, and how did that work?
So it was actually there was a few things we were looking to do. One was we were working with a lot of billing houses at the time. So a lot of local councils in particular that we're working closely with all had different, we're basically handling payments for consumers, rates payments. But a lot of the councils we're dealing with, they're doing that thing that drives an analyst/developer nuts, which is that all their data was all in different shapes, different formats. It would come through at different times. Some of it was CSV, some of it was in text files. And that's where Hyperledger started to get my attention, because it not only standardizes the data set and data sources and such, but it allows for industry partners to come on and really add to the chain and help build it out. So that was basically the crux. And of course, the security side of things is phenomenal, and it still is.
Oh, that's so. How long it took from that until you being swapped up by IBM?
So I was there for about a year, and so we were actually following the Aroha branch and talking directly to the Aroha team just through the open source, like through the GitHub and then through the open source project, which I mean is also Hyperledger, for those that don't know, is backed by IBM, so it's IBM's big open source blockchain project, supported for, you know, a number of years now.
Emphasis on the open source.
Totally open source. solved a number of problems for us, but we were actually working with the development team, or when I say working, we were helping contribute where we could. When I say we, there was me, and then I had a team of devs working on our implementation and then seeing where we could give back to the project. And so we were following Hyperledger from around 0.6, version 0.67 from memory. It was around 6.7, 6.4, before it was even stable. So it was good. And we followed it right through to the 0.9. It was just before it was being released that year. This was in 2017. Yeah, it'd be 2017. Very, very early on in its journey, and you could tell between the different versions there was sometimes they wouldn't work, but I mean we knew what we were in for, which did make development a little bit tricky, but again, you know, we kind of shared back with, you know, whatever findings we had at the time, we'd share them back with the rest of the team, just because it's an open source project, I'd like to contribute back.
100%. So what was it with especially the data standardization part that made it so easy to work with their tools?
It was actually really, really early on in its Aroha's development. So That part was actually kind of tricky in the early version, but I know it's gotten a lot better since. So
okay, so tell us about how much better it is now.
Well, it's a lot more stable, so it's a lot easier to get up and running. And I think that's the thing, like with so many contributors and having all these, great organizations sort of behind the project now, but not like running the project, just contributing to and helping build it up. Like you've got a lot of resources, a lot more resources now, not only, training modules from companies like IBM and a few of the others involved, but also just, that community sort of behind it, being able to answer questions, put out articles, tutorials, sort of all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely come a long way in the last few years. And even the adoption of through the wider industry, like seeing a lot of the use cases appear more now, which is, fantastic, because, it will not only standardizes that data set, but everything's out in the open, like people can, add to it. Like, it's just great to see it build out more.
100%. So what are you working on now?
Too many things all at once. actually, there is a couple of blockchain projects in the works, including, and I'm totally going to give this a plug because there's some amazing folks working on this project, but so currently working, actually had a meeting just today with it, the RMIT online folks, to build out blockchain courses. Not necessarily Hyperledger centric, but Hyperledger is mentioned a few times, but more agnostic, sort of, what is blockchain, strategies behind, like how to implement, getting things like the governance models in place to make sure, longevity of the actual deployment projects, et cetera. Really excited to be part of that team, and even being able to help take those methodologies out to students and help encouraging them to get involved and to build out solutions.
And is this a course that is like for part of their curriculum, or is it open to the whole community? How does that work? And also, is it technical or is it beginners?
The answer to above is all yes.
All of it.
All of the above. Great question. So there's two versions of it. There is a technical version of it. Then there's a strategic or more planning side of it. So more like the business aspects of and things like, actually, one of the interesting discussions we had in today's meeting, totally going to share it, is the whole startup versus industry. So having industry partners get together and say, hey, we want to implement a blockchain. Here's the problem we're solving for, is a different approach to a startup approaching industry saying, hey, we've got this really cool idea. Here's the problem we're building for. which is kind of like coming from the startup world, trying to implement a blockchain, in particular, trying to get those industry partners on board. I feel it's a little bit more challenging trying to do it from that approach rather than the industry coming and going, hey, we've got this idea. Would you like to join? I guess any startup, really, that's kind of one of the big challenges you always face. What was the other two questions? I got talking.
So the first part was it technical or is it for, the lay people? And the other part is it part of their curriculum or is it open to everyone?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It's part of their curriculum, although I think they are also taking one of the courses out as an introductory course. So this will be available in October. We need time to finish building. It's a number of weeks.
Who is working on this with you?
So, amazing question. So Kaya Stewart, Harris Monos, I know Kaya's been on the show before, and I'm definitely keen to get Harris in because he's amazing when it comes to all the blockchain things. Actually has a really cool micro-credentials platform that I will let him talk about. And then also good friends at Wiley who help manage the content and, wrangle us when we start to get off topic, which happens quite a bit, geeking out with all these folks on a call. We can tangent very quickly sometimes. And then we have, yeah, there's some amazing industry folks will be coming in to do some videoing as well. Pretty sure we may be getting you in there. I've mentioned your name a few times, so we'll work on that one. There's a bunch of industry folks that are going to be doing videos. I don't want to give away any more names.
Okay. And don't spill the beans on what you can talk just yet. But it's good to know there are so many good people collaborating on this. I'm sure it's going to be a great course.
But yeah, the course will be out in October. So, but it does it does align with sort of the strategic business side of things, and then also the developer hands-on, what do I need to deploy, how do I support it, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So, okay, that's one thing that you're working on. What else?
Loads of IoT proof of concepts. Still do a lot of IoT stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Actually, I can talk about one that we haven't really announced yet. So this will kind of be the first time I've talked about it in a podcast. So we've recently wrapped up one of our big hackathon series called Call for Code. It's currently in its third year and it aligns with United Nations targets. In particular, sort of talking to societal issues. Oh, tongue twist on a Monday. but this year we launched in February. And it was around climate change. But then we quickly added, the pandemic, so COVID-19. Previous 2 year winners, though, or winners from the last 2 years, I should say, 2018 winners, Project Owl built a deployable mesh network. So it's an IoT device basically for deploying during times of disaster recovery and creates an ad hoc network for first responders and disaster victims to be able to stay connected and like get information backwards and forwards. We're deploying that in Australia with a couple of different of the frontline firefighting teams to be able to give more connectivity. And then our last year winners, 2019 winners, Project Prometheo built an IoT sensor pack for basically like a wearable pack for frontline firefighters. So you can detect the conditions, on them and then also external to them to know when things get really, really dangerous in real time, you can give them the command to pull back, essentially. So,
wow, that's amazing. Yeah,
deploying it, which is really cool because, yeah, we want to get it deployed in time for this year's season. And then these are both open source projects. So taking this out to the wider community to say, hey, we want your help to get this out into the field, help them.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So I guess this will be the longest show with the most things to link at the end.
I'll give you the links for some of these projects. But yeah, these are both open source communities now. So you're always looking for folks to get involved and just help. As a dev, like I love using my developer superpowers to help people, and even better when they can help people help people.
Oh, that is amazing. That's one of the things I love the most about you. All right, let's switch gears a little bit. I think we talked enough about your career. Let's talk about what is your favorite blockchain meme? I know you're a blockchain meme guy.
This actually came up in the RMIT meeting today, but I wanted to call one of the course modules mainly around the history of will the real Santoshi please stand up? Still a big fan of that one. It's a bit like a modern day Carmen Sandiego. I don't know if you remember that game, but where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Great game from the late 90s, early 90s, something like that.
Yeah, it'll be about the late 90s.
Oh, I think you can still play that online.
Yeah, I think you can. There's browser-based versions of it now.
Exactly. All right, so how do you explain blockchain for those in your life that are not, technical or not tech-savvy? Whatever comes up, do you talk Bitcoin first? How does that go?
I think everyone, even the non-tech folks, kind of everyone's heard of Bitcoin these days. It's kind of the consumer of the cryptocurrency world for for my money anyway. It's like, because it's always in the news, like it's the consumer awareness must be like through the roof now, Bitcoin. I guess the way I kind of describe it is it's like running a database across many, many actors, because the whole distributed database. And then when you get into things like, I think that's the smart thing about it is it's hard to inject. And this is kind of getting off that question for a sec, but like smart contract side of things, it's hard to fake those contracts in because of the way the system works. Like it's almost, to get a bit earthy, it's almost like nature. You know, that's a self-correcting system to some extent as well, and that's what the blockchain's modeled after, essentially. Like it has the ability to not only self-heal, but then be able to detect those fraudulent transactions. And then when you get into like smart contracts, it's literally like buying a new car and having the details of it like out in the open, but they don't know your name.
What advice do you have for developers, or you know, anyone in a career in general where there could be not exactly a need, but there's the opportunity to do evangelism and to go out there and talk to people, and people that want to transition from just sitting on a desk job to doing something that a bit more like what you do, what advice could you give them?
Okay. So one thing I always recommend, even to like developers of all walks of life, is just get involved. Like there's always these open source communities, always these meetups, conferences, even hackathons, like get involved with those. Even just from the networking side alone, like new opportunities come out of that, new learnings, new techniques. But not only that, like you're going to be contributing back to communities that already, are behind a lot of the open source libraries that you're using, languages that you're using, et cetera. Like, just get involved. Like everyone wins. particularly like, and I think on the evangelist front, sort of building on that more, like you're always an advocate for something, like something you believe in, something you can get behind. And I think being a full-time advocate is no different in that, well, yeah, you're paid for by a company to go out and do this sort of stuff, but also like you are part of these communities and sort of giving back and helping. And like, it's not and to let you all in on a little secret, it's not a 9-to-5 job. Like you'll be up all sorts of weird hours, especially now that like everything's online. So, and I know many, many people will already be aware, like Australia in particular, our time zone doesn't really line up with anything. So 3 a.m. wake up calls to go to a conference in Europe or the US, like that's normal now.
That is totally normal. I mean, the night hours certainly benefit from living in Australia, right?
Yeah. Well, and you know what? That's actually kind of cool though sometimes, because you'll be awake when others aren't. So you kind of get more work done as part of a global team sometimes.
Also, internet is much better in the early hours when nobody's on it.
Oh yeah, that is true. That is true too. Way higher bandwidth.
100%. All right. So okay, I think we covered pretty much everything. Any other news or any where do people go to find you?
DeveloperSteve.com. Actually, I'm DeveloperSteve kind of everywhere, because funny story, and we were talking about this before the show started. I got married a few years ago. Actually, we only just got around to putting in the paperwork to change our names earlier in the year, but me and my wife basically made a whole new last name because we didn't want to do the hyphenated thing. We thought, oh, we'll put our two previous last names together and make a whole new word. So Cooper plus Houchin became Coochin. So I took that as my married name. And then while my name was in the shop, because I've been doing this sort of like evangelism so many years and kind of people just know me as Developer Steve, I decided to take that as my middle name, as one word, which I'm still half surprised like got through. But and then I have Stephen as my first name. So my legal name is actually Stephen Developer Steve Coochin, but you can find me as Developer Steve kind of, well, everywhere.
Everywhere on LinkedIn, on Instagram,
Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Weibo, Facebook, kind of many, many places, GitHub even.
There you go. Steve is reachable everywhere. Not Steve, developer Steve is reachable everywhere. Just, you know, drop him a line, say hi, and, you know, go do some open source cool stuff together.
Yeah, really keen to say hi. So, yeah, reach out, connect, and, yeah, would always love for geek outs.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
No worries. Talk soon.
And that was the awesome developer Steve. Remember, get in touch, say hi. There's heaps of resources that Steve can connect you to, and, you know, play together, build together. Open source is a great thing. Apologies on my part for the audio. I'm having troubles with the internet. Hopefully it didn't annoy you too much. Be moving house soon, and I am expecting to have great internet in my next house. So we'll see how that goes. I'll keep you posted. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you at the next vlog. Bye.